Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints talk with me. Heath Elson-san, Wesley Coleman, so from Russell and Monroe, actually from border to border and coast to coast, all you guys are locked in, locked down, not working. You got a little bit of sports talk to listen to here. The Saints, it's been a very, very busy week, and I think right now is a good time to discuss some of the signings, some of the things that have been going on. Quite frankly, it's just been very busy in a very awkward time. So talk a little football, get your mind off of it. Wesley, how you doing today? Welcome to the show, brother.
I'm doing good. I keep checking the mail, waiting on my stimulus check, but besides that, I'm good.
Yeah. Heath, have you gotten yours? You probably got two by now, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm good. This can last for the rest of the year. I'm squared away.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. Well, there are some guys who just recently got signed by the Saints who will be good for a while. And before we even get into that, does it not, with the way things are going, does it not, like, I wonder if it worries these teams at all if there are talks that this whole, lockdown could last months. And what if, I've even seen some talk about it lasting through the football season. I mean, they sign these huge contracts. Do the teams still have to pay these guys even if they don't play the season?
No, I don't know. That's a good question.
I thought that the NBA is going to, like, their next round of checks is supposed to go out is April 4th, and they are going to pay all of their players their full pay. Obviously, that's the end of their season being canceled, which is very different than the entire season, so I don't know. Like, they did a lot of work to avoid a lockout or a work stoppage to not get any money. That'd be tough on everybody, I think.
Heath?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I assume they have some sort of contingencies in there for. I mean, I don't know anybody exactly envisioned a situation like this. You know, I don't know if anybody's contract says anything about the plague in it. You know, but. If it lasts that long, I don't think it's going to matter. Everybody's going to be in a lot more trouble than that if you go long enough to go all the way through an NFL season.
Yeah, at this point, it's something that went through my mind, but at this point, I would have to say if the NFL season got canceled, that we'd have a lot bigger things to worry about. So,
if this is still going on in the NFL season, that ain't going to matter because we ain't going to be no TVs in the soup line. We're all going to be standing there.
Yeah.
This is going to make the Depression and the Great Depression look mild.
Absolutely. Okay, so just one of the things I heard today, Eli Apple signs with the Vegas team, and that's hard to say. I'm just getting used to calling them the Los Angeles Raiders as opposed to the Oakland Raiders, and then they moved to Vegas. But $6 million for 1 year, Heath, what do you think about that? About right? Too much? Not enough? Should the Saints have tried to keep him?
I think he's overpaid.
At $6 million?
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, I don't know. I mean, that sounds about right. I mean, the dude is not the worst cornerback in the league. Looking at the salaries and all, that's probably about right, I guess.
Yeah, I think relative to what everybody's making now and the contracts that came out, and it's just every year, just the way it goes up continues to surprise me. But Wesley, I think, $6 million for a guy, he's talented, and I know everybody keeps waiting for him to come around, and he did play. I remember when he got hurt in the Chicago game, at the end of the Chicago game, everybody thought our season was over.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that still, what is it, he's 25 or 26, still really young. He was, I think, the number 10 pick, but a high first-round draft pick. He's young and can be coached up, and he had flashes the last, you know, year and a half with us of making some plays and putting together some games. And, you know, how real is it that his season last year was based on and some injuries and all? I mean, he legitimately looked like he tore his knee to pieces there in that game. So him even coming back a little bit was okay. So we'll see. I don't think that's not a bad 1 year prove it deal for somebody with his I guess you want to call it upside.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a guy Brady signs with Tampa Bay. There is a lot of talent on that roster, and it seems to me, or not seems to me, but it feels like the Saints are always the second best team to whatever team is horrible who happens to put it all together. And although a couple of times it's been the 49ers, right? The 49ers come from being a terrible team to all of a sudden almost unbeatable when the Saints really are the best team until they come out of nowhere. Could Tampa Bay, now that they have Tom Brady on their roster, could they turn everything around and become that team that moves right up to the top of the league?
They could. I mean, it's possible. They have a real coach now. Like Arians is a coach. I thought that maybe he could come in and actually get something out of Winston. That didn't work out. Now they got Tom Brady. Like you said, they have plenty. Defense may be a little bit of an issue, but they got a lot of offensive talent to go with Tom Brady. Now, we're going to get this is the first time in, 20 years we're going to get a chance to see whether Tom Brady was the ultimate system quarterback in New England, or whether he can go somewhere else and play at the same kind of level and have the same kind of success. But I still think, even saying all of that ultimately the Saints control their own destiny.
What I found interesting is that Winston actually had a better quarterback rating than Tom Brady last year. So I doubt that we'll see anything that will answer that question, right? Like, because if he does come in and he's horrible, they'll just be like, well, he wasn't very good in this last year in New England. But it right. just what does scare me is that offensively, Tampa Bay has a lot of skill players, and if they could get a quarterback, and they play every time we play them, they end up moving the ball. And if it's not for a few turnovers, Wesley, I see you shaking your head over there. No.
Well, I mean, no. And here's what's the deal: is like they've got on offense the players that make the headlines and jump out. With you have Mike Evans and Godwin. And the big tight end, they got that. What they don't have is an offensive line.
Right.
That's a team. And again, it came down to his decisions basically between the San Diego, Los Angeles, Oakland Chargers, who have a really, really bad offensive line, but they just got Trey Turner, and then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that probably have a worse offensive line than the Chargers. And again, they got all that sizzle and all, but he's not. I just don't know. Like the 43-year-old quarterback with not a great offensive line, and with our division, and I'll throw Atlanta in there too. Two teams with bad offensive lines, and we keep a pretty deep defensive line. I think that it puts us in a good position. But we saw the headlines where like all the networks all day long was Tom Brady's greatest games, and he did this and. I think they're in the top six for Super Bowl favorites now, which just seems crazy to me.
No, I saw them
still behind the Saints, though.
Yes.
So behind the Saints to win the division and the Super Bowl, but they're still the top. I think they're either fifth or sixth, which I can't see that.
So I asked Heath the first question because I wanted to save this one for you. Our other division rival, or well, maybe our biggest division rival, Atlanta Falcons, signed Gurley. And you seem to be, I mean, you are in cloud nine. He's obviously some kind of girly crush you have on him. I mean, I was trying to make the point that while he's a good player, you can't put a whole workload on him. It seems like Wesley, I mean, what are you thinking there? All pro, maybe Hall of Fame this year?
If he's healthy, he makes them a lot better than they are without, even with Devontae Freeman, who they don't have anymore. The question is, and like was your point, was about health. And the question being, was he as unhealthy last year as we thought he was, or it seemed like he was? Or I mean, the coach goes, I just was stupid in the way I used him. They said he was healthy. He was active in 15 of their 16 games. he just didn't have a heavy workload. Now, whether or not was that was them trying to do it without him so that they could move on from him this year, because the terrible contract they signed him to, even if he was the best running back in the history of football last year, they had no way to keep him in that contract next year. It's a dumb, dumb contract. I didn't want to miss out on the fact that he legitimately, if he's semi-healthy, makes our biggest rival a much better team. Having said that, the Atlanta Falcons have done a whole lot of things this year that I think made them a worse team, by getting rid of their starting running back and getting rid of two starting cornerbacks, and I'm not really sure what they're doing. I mean, they're a pretty confusing team where they kind of have that same thing that we're looking at with Tampa Bay, is if they got who they think is a quarterback, a decent running back, and then a couple of receivers, and screw it, if we don't need an offensive line or people that can defend them against the pass.
Well, based on our text exchange, you see, you take a little bit different tone, so and you didn't bite on any of the poking that I was doing at you. The thing about it is Gurley, when healthy, and the thing is, I'm not saying that because of the way his it's not even an injury, it's just chronic knee issues, or tendonitis slash arthritis, is that when he's on the field and he's getting his carries, he'll kill you. I mean, he's still a good running back. I watched him last year, and he was still very productive. The problem is that he can't handle more than 15 touches a game. And if, let's say, he had a game where you say, man, we really got to lean on him because that's just how this game's going, then he may not be able to even play the following week because of inflammation. It's just that, based on the research, because quite frankly, whenever you and I, well, the whole group was having our little text exchange, I felt like maybe I need to investigate a little more instead of just saying he's injured. And it just seems that it's like, yeah, he can play. He can play at a high level, but he just cannot take, and I won't say the pounding, just simply, you know, he's going to be a guy that won't be able to practice through the week. And to get to the point, how does he help or not help Atlanta? I think he makes them a better team. But I use the word, and you kind of focus on backup. He may not be the backup in writing, but at the end of the day, they're going to have somebody else on that squad that can take a good 15 to 20 carry load off of him and let him be more of a, you know, a fill-in spot guy that you just bring in later in the game. You just can't put the workload on him.
So two points to that is what I'll say. So going with the first point is, one, I don't think he was as unhealthy as when he was used last year. I hope that I'm wrong, and I hope he can only play 12 plays a game. But I just was trying not to take that for granted. I think he was used really dumb by McVay last year, and he probably could have played more plays. But let's say if he can play Devontae Freeman, who just left Atlanta that he's replacing, missed a whole lot of time every single season, and that's why they have Ito Smith, that I know Atlanta thinks that Ito Smith is a really good backup-shared running kind of person. I just say, even if he only plays a little bit, I think he'll play at least as much as Devontae Freeman, and I think he's better than Devontae Freeman.
Well, okay, and I can hand you that. Now, the question, and we'll put the Todd Gurley subject to bed, is his contract doesn't necessarily say that he's capable, because I don't have it in front of me, but what was his contract? Was it was a 1 year, $6 million? And
I'm making up in my head it was 7.5, but it was 6 to 8 million. Yeah.
Okay. And so,
the Rams are going to be paying him 7.5. The Atlanta is going to be paying him 6, but he owed a 1.5 million to whoever it was, his agent or whoever the dude was. But you know, Rams are paying a good bit of money for him to be playing somewhere else this year.
You know what? And I didn't even think about,
you know.
Go ahead, Heath.
Yeah, I took the whole thing last year a different way. I think he really was more hurt than what – I don't think McVay just lost his mind and because if you look at the way he did not use Gurley last year, that's one of the biggest gaps in coaching history or whatever, the way that was managed. And I don't think that's the guy. Basically, all of that because they were trying to trade him, and so McVay wasn't going to come out and say, "Man, the dude's hurt." You know, between that, him saying that I just used him wrong, and the fact that nobody could run medicals on him and all, they were trying to pull a fast one and unload him to somebody, and they were willing to pay a bunch of money to do it. And we'll see, you know, but whenever he can go, yeah, you know, there's no doubt that the dude is good. But there's been rumors for quite some time. I don't know if it's quite this bad, but, you know, it's a popular phrase when somebody, you know, they's bone on bone in that knee. I mean, people have been talking about this for 2 or 3 years now. So, I don't know. We'll see.
All right. So let's move on to Saints. They've made quite a few moves. Now, some of them may not be as exciting because they were the Saints' own players that they re-signed. David Onyemata, who personally I've always been a fan, and he's been a solid player. I think people, because of his athletic skills and the fact that everybody, oh, he's so raw, the expectation was that somehow he would end up being a superhero. I believe, and we talked about this already, now that I recall, he could end up being a guy that his contract, he could outplay it if he could develop in the way that you would expect from a guy that just came from such a limited football background. So I guess maybe this is some fandom coming out in me, is that I'm hoping, Heath, that we see a guy, and I'm bringing you in first, Heath, because I know that you weren't a huge fan of him. I mean, I know you didn't think he was garbage, but you didn't think that he would really get a big payday or that he would bring him back. So the Saints would bring him back. So Onyemata, I'm looking for him to come back, and as usual, I'm filibustering here as I'm trying to remember the name of the kid that went to New England and then went to that played for the Saints and then went to the Chicago Bears, who turned into Akeem Hicks. You know, I'm thinking Akeem that Hicks. He could end up being on the same trajectory as a guy like that. And boy, I think at $10 million, you were, and it's not even $10 million, it's like $9 million and change, he would end up being every bit worth every penny of that contract if he ends up being that kind of player. Right now, I think the money he's getting paid based on what he does on the field. I mean, he's a strong run defender. He can play all three downs. He's not a dominant pass rusher, but he's not a guy that's just a slug on the field. You know, that if they happen to pass the ball on a down, he's in there, he's useless. He's a good pass rusher, just not necessarily dominant at this point.
Yeah. Now, like I said before, we talked about this before, and I think the biggest thing with me this year, with number one, I didn't pay attention to what he's actually doing this year, but I think I may have built up my expectations for him too much. I came in the last year thinking that he was getting ready to explode and just be an absolute beast. And so I may have pumped myself up. But then when I looked at the numbers and I saw at that point there weren't that many defensive linemen that were making $10+ million a year. I don't remember what the number is. I messaged to you guys one day when I read the stat, and I just said, man, I know the contracts go up every year, but I just, based on what we've seen so far, I didn't think you could give him $10+ million a year. He got close. What did he actually get, 9 or whatever? Hey, he got just slightly.
3 years, $27 million.
Yeah, so an average of $9 million a year or whatever. And so, but I guess with the increases in salary every year, that's about right. You know, we got question marks for Rankins. And that was the other thing that was factoring into it. It was like, you can't give both of those guys big money. Now, if Rankins is taking himself out of that by not being able to stay on the field and being injured and everything, well, then that's fine. It winds up being on Yamada, and maybe Rankins is headed off to greener pasture at some point. And that's kind of how it looks right now. I mean, we got to see Rankins be able to stay on the field. We need on Yamada to not, you know, quit dealing weed. And, of course, it doesn't matter now. I think they got rid of that. He can smoke his weed now and not even get suspended anymore. Huh? Wasn't that part of the new CBA or whatever?
They retroactively made it okay, so he's fine. He didn't do nothing. He just had him ship some weed over interstate lines. I mean, you know, come on.
Yeah.
All right, so before I get into
he was ordering gummy bears. He didn't know they were weed gummy bears. It ain't even his fault.
His fault. Okay, before I get into the good stuff, because we had a signing that everybody is super stoked about, I'm going to first get Wesley's opinion of our left guard. Andres Pete was re-signed to a decent contract. It's about $10 million a year. It looks like the big dogs that were hoping to be on the market got franchise tagged. So at some point, looking at the market, because I'm just going to say my first reaction was disappointment. But looking at the market, I started realizing, really, there, I see why they did it. There wasn't a lot of other options. I was just hoping that they wouldn't end up paying them $10 million and get away with like $6 or $7 million. But I think that's a pretty good contract for a guy who at times plays well. Now, there's been a lot of rumors floating around, and of course they would, that he was injured last year. But don't you hear that about every guy who doesn't play well? When they re-sign him, well, he's going to get better next year because he won't be injured.
For sure. And yeah. Before we get to the exciting DJ Swearinger trade, we need to talk about it. Okay, so I'm right there with you. I went into this offseason saying we needed to get our offensive guard and at least one receiver from free agency. And then other things I was comfortable with us drafting, but we needed to upgrade Pete. Then a few days later was completely shocked by the prices that the guards were getting. Not only with Thune getting franchise tag, but these guards that were, I'm going to say better than Pete, but I mean, just they weren't the best guards in the NFL. They were marginally better guards than Pete, getting $14 and $15 million. And I just was, I mean, these are guys I thought we'd be in on at like the $11 million range. And seeing those contracts was, I mean, was shocking to me. I'll just admit, like, I couldn't believe it. It was, and then we got down to guards that basically rated the same as Pete, or not even quite as good as Pete. I mean, that I'm putting that same bank, getting still $11 and $12 million a year. So there comes something that, one, Pete adds two things that make him worth more than his contract, which is, one, is the familiarity with the system. He's been here. He's worked with these guys. They like him. He likes. He wants to do well in New Orleans. And then, two, he has that potential to swing out, and if something happens to Armstead, he can be a serviceable left tackle that doesn't, you know, necessarily get our quarterback killed. Those two things make him worth more. And two, we might be one of the few teams that he's worth more, too, for that. You know, and he's one of those, I'll throw him with the Eli Apple thing. I think he's 26 years old. It's really possible that he hasn't hit his stride and been the best that he can be, and he's been dealing with injuries. But I'll stick with one thing. I'll finish on this, is that if Andres Pete is our worst offensive lineman, that's a really damn good offensive lineman.
Yeah.
I really will stick with that, and I think that the price you pay to keep that five, starting five together, it's worth something.
Heath, you have anything to throw in on Pete there before I move on, and I'll give you first crack at our next free agent. Anything to throw in on Pete?
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree with everything Wesley said. I think they looked at the market. There wasn't a whole lot there. They looked at the familiarity and the fact that he can fill in if anything happens with Armstead, and they said, well, you know, this is what we got to do right now.
And I do believe there is some value to keeping that offensive line together, the cohesiveness. You know, and it's not like it was a garbage offensive line. I think Pete just has some super visible bad plays at times that are just hard to, that just make everything you feel about him. And that's how it gets with me when you go through a game and he has a play where he literally reaches for the guy and is wallowing around while the guy runs right around him. But generally, I don't know. Maybe I'm just trying to make excuses for him because I'm sitting here thinking of the PFF ratings. I don't guess that everything the Saints do has to somehow be excused as gold, but I will excuse it as it, they didn't have a lot of other options to improve. And at the end of the day, if the market is $10 million, the market's $10 million for a solid quality starting guard, then that's what you're gonna have to pay. And unfortunately, the Saints weren't able, although lots of the rumors, lots of talk and chatter was they were trying to upgrade the guard position, weren't capable of doing it, and then you just bring back a familiar guy who's familiar with the system, and apparently he's very well liked in the building, he's a good guy, you know, so at the end of the day, I think it is what it is, and I think I'm going to quit trying to justify it to make it sound like it was better than it was, and I'll go with what Wesley said. Hopefully, he's still a young guy, and maybe he'll feel his way through and improve in some of those areas. So I'm going to throw a good one at you here, Heath. Emmanuel Sanders, the Saints wanted to trade for him last year. The fans were just excited beyond belief. I was pretty amazed because it happened late at night, and you know, I thought the day was over, and next thing you know, I see on Twitter that they signed the guy. He changes the offense. I think it's one of the bigger, more impactful moves of the offseason.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think I saw that written somewhere. They did a, you know, worst signing, best signing, and at least I think they labeled it as the most sensible signing of free agency so far. This is a guy that I wanted to see with the Saints for a long time. He's the perfect kind of guy to play in the Saints system. He can run all of the routes. He can play out of the slot. He can play on the outside. You know, and I watched some YouTube videos this week of some people going over what he did last year. Unfortunately, a number of the highlights were against the Saints last year in Dome. But, you know, assuming now he's getting older, every year that passes, you know, you hope the wheels don't fall off. But seeing what, you know, what I saw out of him last year, he, you know, while he may not be quite as fast as he was, you know, going back to his Denver days and whatnot, he's going to bring a lot to this team, and he really, I mean, instantly changes things up, our entire outlook. You know, you finally have that real number two guy now. And, you know, and for sensible money.
Right.
I mean, he wanted to, and you know, they talked to him, and he wanted to, he just said he could not pass up a chance to come play with Drew Brees and the Saints. I think he could have got more money elsewhere. And so, I mean, what's not to like about that, man? A guy we really need that actually wanted to be here.
Yeah, I think you can't overstate that a guy who thinks that the Saints, and he mentioned this as well, is an opportunity to win another Super Bowl. The interesting thing, Wesley, is he's played in three Super Bowls on three different teams. What I'm a little concerned about, Heath already mentioned it, not just him, but we seem to be bringing in some guys who are a little bit long in the tooth. Now, are they still good players? Yeah, I think they are. But, man, you just don't want to be that team they sign with and all of a sudden they just become ineffective because, you know, they're banged up all the time or they're just a step slow. But your thoughts on Sanders?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the two older guys that we brought in, Sanders and Jenkins, have neither one had problems with injuries in their career. They've both been very consistent with their performance and taking care of themselves. Sanders, I'm blown away by. I went into last offseason saying my dream free agent signing was Jared Cook. I didn't think that would at all happen, so I was blown away with him. This was when I went into this offseason, I wanted to sign Emmanuel Sanders. I think he's been perfect for this offense for a long, long time. And I know that Keith, you were talking about Shiel Kapadia from The Athletic was doing the thing saying that it was the signing that makes the most sense. And then yeah, I saw another interview with him where he's talking about his grandma is a huge New Orleans Saints fan, and she actually drove to the game before he was there. Like, it's within driving distance. And when he was a rookie, he called him and said, "We want you to come play in New Orleans." And
he said,
"Houston's contacted me, and Dallas has contacted me. We'll see." But he actually said, "My grandma loves Coach Sean Payton, loves Drew Brees, and loves what the Saints offense does, and wants me to play there." Cool for you're talking a 33-year-old receiver. I think a lot of times those guys, when they're offered contracts, will be like, "Well, you know, how do you want to use me? What do you want to do?" He said they had none of those conversations. He said, "I will do whatever they want me to do. I'll line up in any position." He goes, "If they want me to block, I'm going to block. I'll run every single route on my route tree. I don't care. I'm there to do whatever Sean Payton says." Because they asked him, like, "So how are the Saints going to use you?" And he was like, "I don't know. Like, what? However they want to." So he definitely is coming in with that attitude. And he said, "There has never been a player playing in four Super Bowls with four different teams." He wants to be that player. It's a big deal to him. And he's flat out said, "I'm going there to help that team take the next step and go to the Super Bowl. And they are a Super Bowl team without me. With me, I think that we're even better." Like, he's got the attitude, and I'm blown away by it. And this is without – y'all remember, we went into this offseason with $10 million to spend. And we get away from that because we just get used to what Loomis can do. But, you know, re-signing Pete, re-signing Onyemata, I know we restructured some contracts. But bringing in some people that are going to help us get to that level – it's crazy to think about that we got Emmanuel Sanders, especially in the second, for the price that we did in the second wave of free agency.
All right, so we also picked up Malcolm Jenkins. People that are probably accustomed or know who that is. He played with us in the Super Bowl years, a first round draft pick out of Ohio State. I don't know if he replaces Von Bell. I'm not sure that's exactly why they brought him in. Now, not to say that Von Bell, because quite frankly, I thought Von Bell's a nice player. I didn't look at Von Bell as a difference maker, as a guy that if you lose him, you lose this big portion of your defense. But having said that, with Chauncey Gardner and Malcolm Jenkins, I think they now have some flexibility to run that safety, meaning the not the, the single high safety, but the safety that can play in the box with someone who can cover. So I think that while I guess I'm trying not to suggest it takes two people to replace Bell, they now have two people who may not be quite in the same level as a run stopper as Bell, but bring more to the table in their diversity and their ability to cover. And both of them are good physical players as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately Jenkins is here to replace Bell. You know, Bell is a little tougher up in the box, but I think overall, you know, Jenkins is certainly better in coverage. And, you know, at first I was a little bit, and mainly because of his age, you know, and then my first thought was, okay, the, you know, five or six, however many years later, the Saints are going to try to correct the mistake of letting him go to begin with by bringing him back, and he's you know, his best days are behind him. And, you know, I started having visions of Kenny Stabler and Billy Homer and stuff from the early days. You know, we bring in a guy that's 87 years old and all Jim Taylor. But, you know, but being a little more realistic, he's still playing, you know, as Wesley quickly pointed out after that conversation started, his numbers are great. I mean, he's still playing at a really high level. There's another guy, you know, next year is another year, and just hopefully he can keep going at the same level he's been going at. But, you know, Gardner was kind of already an obvious replacement for Bell.
Yeah.
There's so much similarity between, you know, the physicality, the, you know, all the things you were talking about. But I think Malcolm, he gives you more range at that other safety position. You know, he can go where Von Bell just has not been able to go. And I think it gives him a lot more flexibility than when Bell was here, you know. And originally there was a report, I think it was an erroneous report, it turned out that Bell had turned down a big contract and the Saints went and moved on with Malcolm Jenkins. And then I think Underhill came out and clarified that that wasn't the case. He did have an offer on the table from the Saints, apparently. But yeah. Then the Saints went out. I don't believe at any point the Saints thought they could re-sign Bell and sign Jenkins, considering what they gave to Jenkins. So I have to feel like in the end of the day, they decided to move on from Bell, you know, with Jenkins.
Wesley, one of the things that I always have to combat here is they talked about Bell and his role as a pressure player and how he affected the quarterback. And I the first thing I thought of is, like, generally speaking, I'm not saying there aren't guys who are better than others or whatever, but when a safety is pressuring the quarterback, more times than not, it's schemed that way. You very rarely see a safety over there, you know, overcoming or defeating the block of a tackle or a guard or even a running back. A lot of times when one of those defensive backs are coming off the edge, they're schemed, and really their only role is to make sure they actually tackle the quarterback and get them to the ground. So I don't know if the Bell did force the ball out quite a few times last season, but I don't know if that really overcomes the lack of his weakness in pass defense that Malcolm Jenkins and Chauncey Gardner are both better players in pass defense.
Yeah, and to be fair, Von Bell didn't force a lot of fumbles, but he did recover a lot of fumbles. And I know that's small minutiae. But I don't – my safety, I'm paying my safety to help when the quarterback is throwing the ball to the receivers. Don't get me wrong. I I think scheme-based, it's really cool that Dennis Allen does things that gets extra sacks or pressures the ball out by using the safeties. But the reason that works is because you do it one every 18 plays.
Right.
You can't call that the main role of the safety because, honestly, that's a scheme. I think that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson could go blitz the quarterback as good as Von Bell can. I respect both of them being able to do that. What I need is a safety that's great on the back end. And, again, I love Von Bell's physicality and the way he attacks the run. But, again, the main goal of my safety is I really need my safety helping against the pass. We're one of the best teams in football over the last 3 or 4 years against the run. We haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher in a game in, whatever, 3.5 years or 4 years, whatever it is. We have sure as hell led a whole bunch of 300-yard passers. We need help in the passing defense, and I think that Malcolm Jenkins makes us way better in that without being terrible against the run. The other side of it is we got somebody who will make Marcus Williams and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson both better and be able to teach them all kinds of things that he's a second coach there on the field that can teach them all kinds of things to make them better that's going to help them for the rest of their careers here in New Orleans while showing them how to conduct themselves and all, but also while he's still a great player. It's not like he's on and it's like, we brought in Roman Harper a few years ago and it's like, hey, just, show these people how to be a nice guy. And then he was awful on the field. He's going to come in and be a great player, but also hopefully make both of them better as well.
Okay, so let me ask you guys, and it's going to be hard with us over Skype like this. We lost AJ Klein. I think he was a good, solid player. He got a really nice contract from Buffalo, and I don't think I would have expected or wanted the Saints to match that contract. Having said that, we are pretty thin at linebacker. Now, where I'm going with this conversation is, I think it was a foregone conclusion based on the depth of the draft and the Saints' need that it was going to be a wide receiver in the first round, unless somebody fell that you just couldn't overlook them. Now it seems like that may not necessarily be the top priority, but golly, doesn't it have to be linebacker if it's not wide receiver?
Yeah, I mean, that's generally how I feel right now. Heading into the first round, I would agree with that. I think the Saints have always done best play. I think the Saints are willing to go best player available at any point. But, man, I really hope that like the right wide receiver or running back, linebacker, and by the right receiver, I think – I know Wesley and I both agree that the wide receiver is Jefferson, and the linebacker is Murray from Oklahoma. Would be the two guys that would just absolutely put a smile on my face if either one of those guys is sitting on the board when the Saints go to pick. But yeah, I am a little bit concerned. I mean, at this point, I know you've been saying it, Dave, for a while about Anzalone said that he's good now, that his surgery wasn't done right, they fixed it right now, and he's going to be good, and at this point, I hope to God, I mean, I really do, and I hope the Saints feel very strongly about that, and I hope maybe that's why they either, I can't say that they weren't aggressive in trying to sign one of these free agent linebackers, but, you would think that if the Saints really wanted somebody like that, I saw what Collins wound up getting, the Saints would have gone further than that if they needed to compete to get that guy, I believe. And so I hope between re-signing Alonzo and knowing where he is in his rehab, knowing where Anzalone really is, that hopefully they feel better about their linebackers than maybe I do right now. But I don't think the Saints are just going to take a linebacker if it's not the right guy. Unfortunately, I don't think the draft is very deep in linebackers.
Right.
At least not ones that you would pick at our picking position. Maybe later in the draft, but I don't think there's too many superstar linebackers that are going to have any possibility of being available when we pick. Emmanuel Sanders helps a lot, but I don't think the Saints would stop from picking the right guy, like a guy like Jefferson, who I think he's another guy to me that just makes I mean, I've always liked him, and then when he ran a faster time than everybody expected, I'm going to like him even more. But what I really, really like him for is in the Saints offense.
Right.
Because I think he's kind of, he's a perfect guy to play in the Saints offense. He's kind of tailor-made. And so I don't think the Saints would pass on a chance and add another guy like that, quite frankly. But then there's some other places that you go to, offensive line, you know, cornerback. They could still, you know, could still use some cornerback there for sure.
Wesley, do you think that two guys are rated about the same? One's a linebacker, one's a receiver. You know, which direction do the Saints go?
Yes, I don't think. I think the Saints are, like kind of Heath alluded to, I think the Saints are very strict. If the wide receiver is what they consider the best player on the board, and the linebacker is who they consider the number two player on the board, they're going to draft the number one player on the board whether they need him or not. And that's worked. Me personally, and he said it exactly, my number one person that I want us to hope is available is Justin Jefferson. Number two right behind him is Kenneth Murray. And then I've got Patrick Queen behind him, who I know we haven't seen a lot from him, but just from he didn't have a long college career that we got to watch, but he would fit in next to DeMario Davis, and whether it was Anzalone or Kiko Alonso. But I want Jefferson in this offense for years to come. I think he's kind of what the Emmanuel Sanders. He fits perfect. He can play a couple of positions and would look great here and would play really hard for the city of New Orleans. Kenneth Murray's a killer linebacker that you take that guy as a rookie and stick him next to DeMario Davis, and we'll have the best defense that we've seen in New Orleans in a long time with the way this line, with the way our defensive line is, the way these cornerbacks that we just talked about are, the defensive backs. He's a stud. And then kind of like he alluded to is, I think after, I mean, obviously Isaiah Simmons on a different planet, but after Murray and Queen, there's to me, a pretty big drop to your other linebackers, like your Zach Bond and Dye and stuff like that. I think they're not Kenneth Murray or Patrick Queen, but I don't know. And I think the Saints will be strict. I think that they will go with whoever is the best player on their board, regardless of who it is.
Well, I would think that because of the lack of depth at linebacker in the draft, I think that logic might tell them that if they have two players rated similarly, and you know, we're all going under the assumption that it's linebacker and wide receiver, because it seems to be the two biggest holes on the team, or wide receiver isn't quite the hole it was. But having said that,
they're going to draft a safety.
Yeah, they'll end up drafting a guard or
Grant Delpit. Yeah, they're going to draft Grant Delpit in the first round. We're going to what the hell?
Right, but for this discussion, if it's one of those two positions, I think that a team would have to feel safe to say, okay, if we can get the top-tier linebacker, there is not going to be another linebacker in the second, which I know the Saints don't have a second-round pick, but if they were to move up or even in the third, where they may feel like Sanders gives them what they need, and if they want some more depth, they could wait a little bit later into the third round and still get a quality receiver if that was actually a game plan. But now we're getting into this deranged idea that somehow the Saints over there are like, we must draft a wide receiver, when Sanders may have very well, you know, just depending on how they feel about Tre'Quan Smith and his development. I know a lot of people are down on him, but, you know, and I can't say that I'm not one of those. I don't know. I think maybe the weird thing going on in the country has me less optimistic about the Saints, because usually I'll sit there and try to figure out the best possible scenario about why we re-signed Pete, and the best possible scenario why Tre'Quan Smith is still the best option, you know, for a number three or four wide receiver. So we'll see. The next thing is wondering if there's even going to be a draft anytime soon. It's scheduled for what, the end of April or beginning of May? You know, there's a very good chance.
It's in April, but the last I heard is they're going forward with it, but there won't be anybody. It's going to be in a studio setting, and they're going to cut to the GMs and people at their headquarters making the picks. So essentially, no gathering. It's not going to be in Vegas. They've already called off the
right,
get a deal at Vegas.
Rooms of less than 10 people.
You know what? I'm okay with that. Like, part of my issue with this is they send America home, but God, I think that they could have found some entertainment that, you know, if done properly, you don't have to cancel everything, and this would be a great... I mean, if they canceled this, it would be a hard pill to swallow. I mean, there's no basketball, there's no baseball, and the draft, I mean, most football fans just look forward to the draft. I mean, it's one of the most popular off-season. Hell, I think the draft might be more popular than some of other entire sports. But the point is that they have to figure out a way to keep this thing on so that the fans, you know, not just the fans, just people have something to look forward to.
Yeah.
All right, well, do you guys...
I agree. I think they should be able to do it, you know, they can do that remote. That's something they could easily pull off remote, I think.
Do you guys have any final thoughts?
One more thing, and I just thought it... Go ahead. I must have missed you, right?
No, I was just saying, go ahead. Do you have a final thought you want to share with us, Heath?
This is just kind of funny, but I heard this week, I'm not sure if it was an actual fact or if it was kind of tongue-in-cheek. I wanted to go look it up, but it's possible that Emmanuel Sanders caught more passes in the Superdome last year than Tre'Quan Smith did. And so, you know, the point is that, you know, I really wanted Tre'Quan Smith to work out. The guy showed some flashes, but certainly no consistency. And, you know, I don't think the Saints at this point, hey, he's still there. He'll probably still make the team, even if they were to draft another wide receiver. I think he's good enough to be the fourth guy for sure. But and maybe he will develop or whatever, but I don't think the Saints are going to factor him too heavily into the plans at this point.
Oh, that's fair enough. Wesley, any final thoughts?
You know, this offseason started off, it's been great so far for what I think we need. Our offensive line so far, it looks like it's going to have the first six or seven players on the offensive line, including the first five starters, are all going to be exactly the same. Our defensive line is going to be all of exactly the same players coming back, so they're going to have some familiarity with each other. It looks like that we've, with Janoris Jenkins coming in as a full-time cornerback across from Lattimore, that's two who can cornerbacks that people consider number one cornerbacks, along with upgrading at least our pass defense for the safeties. You know, our tight ends, we're going to have the same three best starting tight ends there, and then we've upgraded the receivers. And Emmanuel Sanders, one thing he does is any problems that Andrew Speaks had about necessarily the bull rush, you know, knocking him down and what he's had, Emmanuel Sanders, that's what he fixes. He makes us better when teams are blitzing. We know how great Drew Brees is against the blitz, but Emmanuel Sanders is a guy that gets open quickly at the line and then comes across the middle and will run anything you want. So any problems that we've had with Andrew Speaks with some of that, Emmanuel Sanders actually helps make that better as well. I think that we've definitely upgraded the team, one, by our younger players going to be a year older and have more experience, keeping the band together in the trenches with our offense and defensive lines, and keeping those guys together where they can communicate and keep getting better together. But then getting a couple players with some experience that have made us better. Again, it's easy for us to get to obviously be hard on us the way the season's in, and that we've won a whole bunch of games the last three seasons and been a couple of plays away from deep, you know, playoff runs or Super Bowl appearances or Super Bowl victories the last couple of years. And I think we made our team better, and can't wait for the season to start. This is a great start here. Can't wait to see the draft.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Saints did a lot more than I thought they would. I mean, early in this offseason, and I may not have expressed it on the show because I think it was kind of a negative outlook. I kind of looked at the Saints as saying that was it. The window's closed. You know, I don't see the Saints being able to get better enough to get to roll out. In essence, why would they just roll the same team out? But they have, again, Loomis is Loomising, gets guys that you didn't think we would ever be able to get and re-sign players. I don't see the loss of Bell. I don't see him not being offset. Like, I just don't think he's a good young player. I don't want to take anything from him, but what we brought in and who we had on the roster and Gardner Johnson and then bringing in Jenkins, I think we just have it's an offset. It's, as a matter of fact, I think in some instances it might be a little bit better.
Dave, is this a month ago? We guess we're hearing that Breeze apparently told people the Pro Bowl he was going to retire, and without us having the announcement, you know, a month ago we could have been looking at Drew Breeze retired, Taysom Hill, somebody picked him up for a second round pick or first round pick, Teddy Bridgewater's our starting quarterback, and Von Bell and David Onyemata have signed other places, and what the heck's going on with this half rebuilt, you know, team with a $20 million wide receiver that has nobody great to throw him the ball? So it's pretty crazy what happened instead.
Absolutely. So anyway, I think that's about all the show we have. We covered quite a bit. I don't say trying a new format, but you know, there's a little bit different thing going on now that we're doing this over the internet and some things that we're not accustomed to. We're used to kind of doing it in the studio with all of us there. You know, the technical difficulties and the sound issues that we're having, we got to work on, get that fixed. So we appreciate your patience. So for Heath Elson-Son and Wesley Coleman, I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer New Orleans Saints podcast. And we'll talk to you as soon as some more breaking news comes out that we want to put another show out. So we'll talk to you later.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Oh, why don't waste time to tune into our podcast? Oh, girl, give your time to Davey, Heath, and Thomas. We do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast.